House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development will come to order March 10th. We have but a single bill today, but it's a big one, as you can see from the size of it. And we're happy that so many people have come to help us understand it. So I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2152 and invite Tim McCabe and Nancy Hamilton forward to help us get acclimated and oriented on this important bill. Please. Barb, do you want to give a quick summary, or would it be quicker to let the experts go for it?
We can certainly let the experts go for it.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Representative Reed and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Hamilton. I'm the governor's senior policy advisor for economic development. And thank you for the time today to discuss with you what is an important and, we think, exciting reorganization of the Office of Economic and Community Development. My first assignment when I came on board with Governor Kulongoski was to take a look at the department and look at ways we might be able to have greater successes in the agency.
Matt, just suggest you move the microphone just a little bit further away and it won't distort quite as much.
Is that better? Sorry.
Yes, thank you. That's fine.
I'm short, so usually I'm struggling to reach them. This is
doing fine. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. I came on board and began to review how the Office of Economic Development worked, and I found some key issues that I felt if we addressed them, we might have greater success with the department. And some core issues came up. First, we have two kinds of work that happen at the Office of Economic and Community Development. One is a very nimble, entrepreneurial business development officer out in the field set of work, and the other is our community development work, which is a very prescriptive water and sewer system, federal dollars coming through that needed to be allocated in a very specific way. So we had sort of two kinds of staff that were trying to do work that sometimes overlapped and sometimes didn't. The other key thing we found was that the sole source of determining success for OECDD with the state legislature was the determination of job creation. And we found that with water and sewer systems, oftentimes the core purpose for putting a new water system in or improving a water sewer system was to upgrade it for public health and safety issues, not for job creation purposes. And so we had a determinant for success that didn't always match the need for the program. And the agency was trying to sort of respond thoughtfully to all concerns. And so what happens sometimes is the programs or projects that needed to come into place on a more legitimate basis from a public safety and health perspective often didn't make it to the top of the list. We also lacked an asset management system for these water and sewer programs that were being installed because, as you know, that's a loan program and the funds that were allocated were actually loans to municipalities. The state doesn't own the assets. They just loan the dollars to the district. And we had no way of tracking how those assets were being managed once they were put in place. And so we strongly recommended that there was a need to do a better job around asset management with water and sewer systems. The other key finding that we came up with was the notion that the business development efforts in the agency had started to be much more honed, but needed some more work. We were 5 years ago really sort of going after opportunistic things that came to the agency, a company that wanted to move here or stay here. We would respond very well, but we weren't proactively designing a business recruitment strategy. When Tim McCabe, who is now the director of the agency, was the governor's senior policy advisor, he pulled together a solar industry strategy that was underway and was demonstrating enormous success, and we wanted to do more of that. So one of the other recommendations in the reorganization was that we focus in on where our real competitive advantages were. And even if it was a difficult thing to do, to let some other recruitment opportunities perhaps fall by the wayside. As the Betsy Credit program was growing and we were getting more traction around solar and wind, we felt that we needed to take advantage of that, both proactively as well as responsively. We also know that we have very distinct needs in our rural communities versus our more urban centers, and wanted our business development officer responsibilities to reflect those distinctions. And so one of the the other key recommendations we made was to rethink our regional outreach. And all of those recommendations are now underway. Back to the notion of the water and sewer systems and the infrastructure funding programs that the agency oversees, the commission, chaired by Wally Van Valkenburg, who I know has spoken before this committee in the past, had noted that their area of expertise was really around business development. It was not around major public infrastructure projects. And they had requested some technical assistance and expertise that could make recommendations to the commission regarding those programs. Either they should be housed separately or we should have some sort of a subcommittee structure so that once those recommendations came to the commission, they were comfortable that technical content experts had reviewed these and made recommendations with their eyes wide open. And ultimately, that became a recommendation for an infrastructure finance authority, which I know that Director McCabe and others will be describing to you in greater detail today. Those recommendations were received by the governor, who then created an executive order looking to basically develop these restructured operations within the agency, including the infrastructure finance authority. And shortly after that time, the governor appointed Tim McCabe as the new director of the agency, and he has been working diligently and feverishly, I might say, to implement the series of recommendations that were provided during that sort of review process. And our hope is that this also gives members of the legislature a clearer path for assistance in your districts when you have questions, concerns, or projects and ideas that you need to move forward. The structure at the OECD department will better suit your needs as well, which we found were not being met. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. If you're willing to stick around, perhaps we could hear from the director first and then see if there are questions, since you're both bringing a different perspective. Thanks.
Pleasure.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim McCabe. I'm director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. And thank you for having me here today to testify on behalf of House Bill 2152. Nancy did a really good job of summarizing pretty much what I was going to say. We undertook this, and we went through a six-month process where we went out, the commission and members of the agency went out and met with stakeholders throughout the state to determine what was the best way to address their needs, particularly around infrastructure in rural Oregon. As Nancy stated, House Bill 2152 establishes what we're calling an Infrastructure Finance Authority Board. This will be comprised of individuals with expertise in public infrastructure, public finance, and their purpose is to oversee all of these infrastructure needs in rural Oregon in particular. We believe this board will be instrumental in helping to identify and prioritize infrastructure needs in communities across the state. This bill really provides a solid foundation for the distinct function of the department to better serve all Oregonians. By that I mean it really separates the infrastructure portion of the department and the business portion. As Nancy said, we've really concentrated our efforts, particularly around the solar industry and related industries, to renewable energy, and we've exhibited great success. I might say that I was in Arizona on Sunday morning. I picked up the Arizona Gazette, and it talked about Oregon being one of Arizona's top competitors in the solar industry. And I'll tell you, that suggests to me we're doing something right if we can get Arizona's attention. And they listed us, along with five other states, as being their top competitor for this industry. So it says to me we're doing something right. Having said that, House Bill 2152, I think, enables the department to be more effective in those opportunities and to better address them from a business side and take advantage of what our very talented commission has to offer. I think I'll leave it at that and answer any questions you might have. And I'd like to bring Paul Grove up, our government relations manager, to answer any specific questions around that.
Thank you. Did you want to make any opening comments, or should we solicit questions?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, I'll just answer specific questions to the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Really? No questions? Representative Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to compliment you guys on your efforts, and I did attend the meeting in Baker City, and I thought it was excellent. It was well attended, and I think the thought process that you were engaging in was to be complimented. I guess I haven't looked at this in any detail, so forgive me for asking questions that probably I could have answers just by reading it. But the question I have has to do with how you're going to allocate those resources between the divisions you've now created. For example, the rural folks are going to say, well, gee, you're not putting enough money into infrastructure, and others maybe say you're not putting enough money into attracting more business to the valley. So give us a vision of the framework of those decisions.
Director McCabe.
Chair Reed, Representative Bence. The department's funding, and I might actually defer to our Deputy Director Lynn Schessler at some point here, is broken down to community development and business development programs. A significant portion of that, of our budget, is devoted to debt service and is specifically targeted to those infrastructure programs. So what we would do is we already have that those funds initially separated within our department's budget, and what we would do is then prioritize those between those business development programs, those funds specific to the business development programs, and then those allocations that serve the water, wastewater, safe drinking water, community development, and special public works programs.
And if you don't mind, Chair Reed, members of the committee, Representative Bence, it's the way the community is, or the department is structured, that the way the funds are structured, that won't change. The only thing that changes on the infrastructure portion is who makes the determination on how those funds are used. 75% of our total budget today is around infrastructure and debt service. That doesn't change.
Thank you, Chair.
Please, Matt.
Thank you for that, and I'm going to shift gears just a little bit and ask this question. The state of Oregon is facing the same economic disaster that our nation is facing, and I'm just curious, maybe you could address how this new design is going to assist the department in addressing some of these really challenging issues.
Chair Reed, Representative Bence. You know, we looked at that very closely, and that's a very good question. We're looking to apply, you know, the stimulus package that President Obama has put out is very prescriptive on the use of the community development block grant funds as well as the safe drinking water funds. They're very limited in what we can do. The safe drinking water is $29 million. What we're doing is a large community's infrastructure needs on safe drinking water could gobble up that whole $29 million. So what we're doing around safe drinking water is we're using a DHS rating chart that rates them from 95 in terms of need all the way down, and we're taking that $29 million, and we're not looking at communities with a lower need than 65 based on their rating standard. So we're looking to those communities first to see if their projects are ready to be implemented. I mean, that's just one way we're looking at it. Going forward around the budget, we're also going to work closely on the Oregon Way, which is the initiative the governor's putting forward, and we're going to put an economic slant about economic opportunities that are going to be made available to Oregon communities and businesses around that. You know, other than that, we're going to hope that in the ways and means process that these programs get funded at sufficient levels so we can continue to deliver those programs as needed.
I think you kind of, or did you want to make a comment about that too?
I was hoping to just make a footnote.
Please.
To Director McCabe, Representative Bence, Chair Reed. Director McCabe noted the stimulus dollars and how we might be able to leverage some of those program dollars coming into the state beyond the more prescriptive CDBG monies. There are about $37 billion in competitive grant opportunities across the United States. If we were to receive 1% of that, which would be what we are receiving in formula federal dollars, that would be $370 million across a variety of federal agencies and programs. And our intent through the Oregon Way programs that we're going to be sort of lifting up some shovel-ready projects is to specifically require that communities where the work is being done are the place where those hires are being made. So if a large metro area company were to get a major contract, they couldn't just bring their workforce in from the metro area. They would have to hire in Baker. They would have to hire in Coos Bay, wherever the work is taking place. The other thing we're doing is a significant capacity building component to the work that's going to be happening under these stimulus dollars. So if I'm in a smaller community and I'm a larger company, part of my obligation will be to build capacity in those smaller communities with small groups and firms that are looking to do the same kind of work, because we believe that in Oregon, our competitive advantage is our expertise around renewable and alternative energy industries and growing that capacity in Oregon and then exporting that knowledge economy and manufacturing to other states as it becomes a stronger, more broadly held national view. And all the work we're doing in the short term is intended to queue us up for that sort of long-term prosperity. So we've taken some very, very specific actions through the governor's executive order to ensure that kind of prosperity sharing across the state.
Follow. So is it correct to say then that this bill helps you in that regard? And if so, what's the greatest help this gives you in advancing the process you just described?
I believe that one of the reasons the reorganization of the agency helps us with this, of course we didn't know the stimulus package program would be coming at us when the reorganization recommendations were made, but it's actually a good example of why we believe this is a better structure. Our business development officers are cross-training, across regions and areas of expertise. For instance, Tom Fox, who's one of our business development officers here in the Valley, is an expert in lean manufacturing, and we can now take his expertise anywhere across the state to teach lean manufacturing practices to manufacturing entities everywhere. And the new structure that Director McCabe is implementing now allows for more of that cross-expertise training and resource sharing. The other thing that was clear to us as the agency went across the state in the forums that you described, Representative Bentz, was they wanted more on-the-ground technical assistance, especially in our small communities without that sort of infrastructure capacity, resource infrastructure. And we are looking to have our community development representatives much more focused out in the field rather than Salem-based. And that's going to be, we believe, very important to providing a platform for small communities to participate in the dollars coming in, which are going to be complicated to access. And the smaller the community, the more difficult it is to do that. And I believe that the way the agency is being restructured will assist in that effort, as well as other programs that might come down the pike in later years. I hope that's a helpful.
If I might add,
please,
Representative Betts, Chair Reed. The other big thing that I neglected to mention earlier on in my opening testimony is what this bill, one of the big things this bill is designed to do is to add a new layer of transparency and accountability, and that's really what it does. It puts the decision-making on these projects, on the infrastructure projects, in the hands of the stakeholders. These are representatives from the communities, from the counties, from the treasurer's office, and as Nancy said, we're going to create what we call a asset management system so that the projects that come forward are going to have to prove that they're ready to go. We found that many projects are still on the books in this department that are 3 years old with monies allocated to them where the communities weren't truly ready to develop this infrastructure. And to my way of thinking, that's not a good use of public funds. So we've added a layer of transparency, accountability, and an asset management system that this bill offers.
That's sort of a generic question that picks up on some of what's already been said, and I know some of the answer has been woven into your comments, so maybe you could flesh these out a little bit. One, as you separate sort of the business development from the infrastructure, that makes sense to me about the specialization, but could you also say something about how those two functions hopefully will continue to be related, because I think there's probably still a connection. And the second part, as you're thinking about that, on the business development side, with all of its shortcomings, it seems that we tend to evaluate those efforts in terms of job creation. It's less obvious to me how we evaluate, although you talked about scores, the infrastructure, and we've also talked about capacity and so on. Could you please say something about how infrastructure is measured too?
Yeah. Representative Reed, members of the committee, that's a very good question. In the past, around the Special Public Works Fund, which is the primary infrastructure fund that's out there, there was no money specifically allocated for business development needs. By that I mean there may be a site out there where a business chooses to develop and they need to bring a road into it. Those funds were used for that, but there was never funds that were specifically allocated for that. In reviewing over the last 8 years, it's been a while, but there's a specific percentage year after year that went to those infrastructure needs. So we actually do, in the asset management system, allocate a specific amount for infrastructure needs to existing and new businesses coming to Oregon. If that money does not get used, it reverts back to the sewer, water, wastewater system. So we're actually allocating a specific percentage around that, which wasn't there in the past. Okay.
And if I may, Chair Reed, members of the committee, the creation of the Infrastructure Finance Authority and the stat, and at the ground level, at the staff level, you're still going to see that interaction between those folks that serve particular regions for their community development needs and the relationship between the business development side of the house. Nothing will be lost with respect to that interplay between the two when those economic opportunities present themselves and there is an infrastructure project that leads to an immediate economic opportunity. It's really the oversight and the administration and implementation of those community development programs. In terms of metrics, again, in the past, the job creation metric was the main item that was looked at by the legislature. What we're proposing going forward is to better account for what these infrastructure projects actually address. So one proposed change would be the number of infrastructure projects for health, safety, and compliance-related matters. Another one would also recognize the community development piece when we're talking about community facilities with the community development block grant program. So we're really trying to separate out what these infrastructure projects address specifically.
And are we getting to the specific point that we would evaluate the incidence of a certain disease or the square feet that are available for community activities, or is it to that level of specificity when we're talking about infrastructure, or if you could help me a little bit understand that?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, it's not to that level of detail yet. What we would hope to do internally, especially with respect to those infrastructure projects that address economic development opportunities, is to identify the number of feet or square feet that you have mentioned and go from there. And then if it rises to the level of a true performance measure, key performance measure, potentially add it. But something that we would intend to track internally to start.
Thank you. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My line of questions follows yours because I'm not quite sure I understood the answer. So I apologize if my questions are ill-formed. So the infrastructure fund, am I understanding correctly that the infrastructure fund lives within the Business and Development Commission and that the infrastructure fund is moving from a criteria that has historically been based on jobs as a primary measure of ROI and is now moving towards a more comprehensive set of criteria yet to be defined in how we measure return on investment? Is that correct?
Representative Bailey, Chair Reed, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I concur. Exactly it.
Follow up, Mr. Chair,
please.
So I'm trying to wrap my mind around, and I might have missed some words in there. It sounded like there were some constraints on way federal dollars could be used through CDBG money, through the Safe Drinking Water funds that you discussed. So it sounds like the infrastructure fund is going to be used for infrastructure that is directly related to specific programs and mandates, as well as being used in a targeted way. Or are you saying that these funds that have requirements that are put on them match what your opinion is the most effective way to use these dollars?
Chair Reed, Representative Bailey, members of the committee, I think maybe we've complicated the issue. I want to make it clear, the department isn't going to change the way the funds are allocated or the way they're used.
Okay.
That's all going to remain the same as it has for the past, since 1987. Okay, that isn't going to change. Those programs, the community development block grants, the special public works funds, all of those things are good, prescriptive agency measures. We don't intend on changing that. The only thing that's going to change around the infrastructure is who makes the decision how those funds are allocated. Those are very prescriptive programs. Community CBDG, we have, those are federal funds that are allocated according to the federal standards.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the people that compromise the committee that'll make the decision who gets those and who doesn't, who's ready for those and who's not. In the past, the department made those decisions. We're just taking that decision-making process out and forming the Infrastructure Finance Authority a board to make those decisions, to add that layer of transparency and accountability.
So, again, would it be correct to say that then this board that is would be in charge of making those decisions around what the expanded criteria for the definitions of return on investment are, and that they would sort of make the decision of whether or not that's how a return on investment that relates to business maps to a return on investment for public health, relates to a public good, relates to sort of basic infrastructure in terms of individual use, and figures out the translation points between those different measures. Is that correct?
Chair Reed, Representative Bailey, I, with respect to those infrastructure programs, I believe that's a fairly accurate categorization. Yes.
If I could follow up, Representative Bailey, Chair Reed, as sort of a stepping back regarding the asset management system question, the discussion came up during the review of the agency operations that as these dollars are loaned to municipalities, some municipalities were doing a very good job of maintaining their systems over long periods of time with incremental rate increases that weren't knocking their ratepayers over the head out of the blue. Other communities were not doing such a good job, and they would let the systems go completely to zero and then come to the state saying, we need a loan right now. We have a system that's broken, and we need to put it back in place. And so those communities who were not doing a good job of maintaining their assets over long periods of time were getting in the front of the line over communities who had been slowly maintaining their assets over long periods of time in a more responsible fashion. And so one of the other things, and it really was core to part of the restructuring of this, was to provide incentives and accountability around long-term asset management maintenance. And illustratively, I would say it's sort of like you need to get the card in the mail saying your car needs a tune-up. It's, you know, how do these communities communicate with the state of Oregon about how they're managing those assets that they've received from these loans? And that, in the long run, when we're looking way out in the out years, is going to help the state do a more cost-effective job of keeping these systems up and running and working properly, rather than letting them really grind to a halt, and then you have a huge loan that's borne on the backs of your ratepayers in a very short period of time. So that was the other big piece of this, and that doesn't speak directly back to deliverables, but it does speak to wanting an infrastructure finance authority that can look at the whole picture around the mechanics of how infrastructure systems work and what we might be needing. So I think some of those metrics, my understanding is that they'll be defined by this newly coordinated finance authority. They'll be coming back to the director and to the governor's office with recommendations for the metrics.
Before we go too much further, I want to recognize that Representative Edwards is here. I know he's got a busy schedule like we do. You have follow-up.
I defer to the representative, but I can ask my question later.
Okay. Let's bring Representative Edwards up. I know he's probably got to bestow his wisdom on us and then probably take off, so we could probably pick this conversation back up, and then perhaps Representative Bailey can ask your question. Appreciate your patience and your willingness to be with us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to be before you. For the record, my name is David Edwards. I'm the representative from House District 30, which represents Greater Hillsborough, North Plains, and Roy and Verbort in Washington County. Unfortunately, I was in a meeting that prevented me from seeing the opening of the committee hearing, so I don't know what you've already covered. However, I gather that given the line of questioning you've been pursuing, that you've gone beyond the basics of the bill. Let me just quickly cover off on my association with this reorg process. As you may know, I started my public career at this agency. I was a legislative analyst for the agency back in 1992 and 1993. My job there was to review proposed state laws and help determine which ones would grow the economy, create new jobs, and save taxpayers money. And I now found myself, shortly after I was elected, appointed to the commission that oversees the agency as an ex officio member. Senator Johnson and I both represent the legislature as part of that commission. Shortly thereafter, we recommended, as part of our work on the commission, to the governor that he issue an executive order to reorg the department. And the purpose of that reorg was fairly simple: to ensure greater clarity in the agency's mission and to better ensure accountability on the part of the agency from the legislature. Having sat on the Ways and Means Subcommittee and Transportation and Economic Development last session, we had a very difficult time kind of parsing the agency's mission and the rationale for its various functions. And then serving on the commission, Senator Johnson and I recommended that we pursue a large-scale transformation. I want to give due credit to Sarah Miller. I don't know if she's been recognized previously, but she was the project manager that carried us through this very extensive process. And the reorg process was carried out in very businesslike and comprehensive fashion. There were a series of public meetings. We had only 6 months, basically, to reorg the department. After the governor issued his executive order, there was considerable time and effort spent engaging stakeholders in the process to ensure that the results of the reorg best met their needs as well as the needs of the legislature and the state. Following those series of public meetings, there was a creation of a series of work groups. These topical work groups developed in-depth recommendations for the consideration of the commission, and then in the fall we had some additional opportunities for public testimony from stakeholders who participated in those work groups before the commission made its final recommendations for the creation of this bill. So it was a fairly extensive process. Again, I want to thank Tim McCabe and his staff for their engagement during this process. It's been, as you probably understand, trying to be part of this as members of employees of the agency throughout the entire process. These folks have been very understanding and giving of their time and effort, and I want to assure those folks that this reorg process is not any reflection on the quality or integrity of their work. This is an attempt to help them do their jobs even better. And I just want to reiterate that the focus of this whole effort is to better ensure the agency is best prepared to retain, expand, and attract businesses to our state, especially during this critical economic period.
Thank you very much. Other questions for Representative Edwards? Representative Holby.
Thank you, and I apologize for not getting this question to you previous. I've been looking at this, and it may not be necessarily for you, Representative Edwards, but, you know, in the Section 9 of the bill, the Legislative Assembly finds, you know, all these tenets, and then the bill goes on to the reorg, which I, you know, fully support, and I think it's really a great piece of work. Let me say that first. But one of the things that stands out to me, and maybe it's in this bill somewhere, I've kind of combed through it a couple of times and still haven't really found it. There is a statement, that they find that a well-educated and trained workforce is necessary to support business and industry needs throughout the state, and then it goes on later to talk about providing sustainable living wage jobs for Oregonians. But throughout the rest of the bill, I never see any reference to that commitment, to that skilled, trained workforce with a sustainable living wage. Just inferred that business, that's what they produce, I guess. But there's no real criteria for any of these projects to, you know, have a commitment to those goals. So I'm just, and maybe I'm missing it, maybe it's in there, but just... maybe somebody could address that for me.
Well, I don't want to speak on behalf of the agency, but I'll just say that the agency is committed to working with the Community College and Workforce Development Department, the Employment Division, and other related agencies to ensure that we have a comprehensive approach to economic development that includes distinct career pathways that lead to high-wage, high-demand professions. As you may know, there are some related kind of parallel efforts to ensure there is a single entity responsible for workforce development. As you know, at the present time, there are 8 state agencies and the governor's office involved in administering various training and related workforce development programs. Our hope is that a reconstituted Oregon Workforce Investment Board will serve the purpose of establishing a statewide policy for workforce and can be held then accountable by the legislature as the single entity with the responsibility for meeting various workforce training and employment targets. And I believe the agency will again pursue, in working with other agencies, the goal of ensuring a high-quality workforce. It's not only necessary in terms of, ensuring that every Oregonian has the opportunity to maximize his or her earning potential. It's also essential in terms of our larger economic development strategy. I mean, frankly, Oregon does not have the resources to offer potential new companies to our state huge cash incentives. We can't compete at that level. But what we can do is, with an integrated and comprehensive workforce training system, we can offer them the best-trained workforce in the country. And I think we have that opportunity in several areas, including alternative energy and clean technology. And I actually have a bill in, and this is not a moment for self-promotion, but I do have a green jobs initiative in the hopper that would require the Oregon Workforce Investment Board to, it would give them 6 months basically to develop a plan for green jobs to ensure that all of our efforts are aligned. So from K-12 up through OUS institutions, we have a coordinated strategy to ensure that we're matching training opportunities with demand in those high-wage, high-demand professions.
I could offer,
please.
Chair Reed, Representative Holvey, a couple of footnotes to Representative Edwards' comments. One, for the 09-11 governor's recommended budget, the only policy option package that is still on the table is to request one FTE as a workforce development person within OECD, which has never existed. There's never been a formal person whose position is responsible for coordinating with other state agencies as well as our businesses around the state. And it's been very difficult to ensure that those connections are being made as we move forward without someone dedicated to doing that work. And so you will see that in the governor's recommended budget. The other thing I would say is, as we move forward with the stimulus package in particular, there are workforce dollars, and we're developing proposals that coordinate with Department of Employment, CCWD, BOLI, with OWIB, and OECDD to coordinate what our centers of excellence and training centers are so that they sync up with what we believe our best economic opportunities are. And hopefully that if the position is funded in the next session, that person will then take the mantle that many of us have been sort of sharing over the last 12 months. I will say that since Director McCabe came on board, Lynn Schessler attends all of the governor's workforce policy cabinet meetings, and there is a much closer informal working relationship among those core agencies than existed a year ago, and that is reflected in the language you read there. But hopefully that helps.
Thank you. Representative Holwood?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up. I appreciate the comments. I appreciate the intent of focusing on that. I just remained a little bit concerned that when we're spending public dollars, there is no direct requirement or standard that there is a commitment to training. And in fact, I appreciate Representative Edwards' work on trying to restructure workforce development too. I'm not sure how fast that particular legislation is going to be moving through the governor's office at this point, but you know, it just seems to me that, that there is an opportunity here to really have a commitment to some real training, on-the-ground training, instead of just alluding to it. And I guess I see that as a potential problem down the road. And because I, as you know, I serve on the workforce committee as well. And, you know, when we look at our workforce demographics and we are looking at 14,000 workers being short, that many workers in the construction industry that builds this infrastructure by the year 2016, taking into consideration all the people we're adding to it and currently and projecting that out, that's a sizable amount of people to come up with. And I'm just concerned that if we don't take a real proactive approach to that training, that that these projects will be not on time, they will be we'll be looking for less qualified people because we won't have them trained, and the cost overruns will then increase on these projects. So, you know, I just say that because it is a concern that I hold very closely and have been watching for quite a few years. And from my standpoint, we should have a more direct relationship to the use of public dollars and requiring some sort of commitment to training with those dollars that are spent. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Holby. Are there other questions? Representative Bailey, I cut you off earlier. Did you want to pick those up?
Sure. For Representative Edwards or for anybody else, and first off, I'd just like to say that I think this is extremely innovative, and it has long been my belief, and it sounds like this is a lot of the direction that this legislation is going, is that to better support the businesses that we have and to attract businesses to come here, doing more than throwing money at them, but instead providing them something that no other state can offer in terms of infrastructure and training qualified workforce is the way to keep our economy strong. And so I salute the hard work that all of you have put into this. My final follow-up to the earlier line of questioning was just I'm curious, if the infrastructure funding account lives within the Business Development Commission and is responsible for defining the criteria for how infrastructure gets developed, it would seem that there are many ways that you could invest infrastructure that might have a, in the words of the testimony, strategic investment that would have a return on investment that, depending on your criteria, would not relate to business development in any way. So, for example, a park mm-hmm. or something. That would only tangentially relate. Is it the intention of this body to look at infrastructure projects that may not relate to business development despite living in the Business Development Commission? And what is the delineation between what this body does and, say, local or other entities that may invest in infrastructure that does not relate to business development?
Simple question. Yes or no?
You want to take that?
You want to say something?
You might have. It looks like you might have an answer behind
yeah.
you too.
Yeah, Paul.
Sure.
And Representative Edwards, feel free if you, your schedule takes you elsewhere. I appreciate
Thank
you being
Chair.
Here.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you.
Chair Reed, Representative Bailey. If I understood the question correctly,
not sure I did.
Again, you were talking about the infrastructure fund being located under the authority, ultimate authority. Of the Business Development Commission and what the role of that, what the Business Development Commission would be in the administration of the Infrastructure Fund. Is that an accurate?
We can start there.
Okay. And really, the Business Development Commission's role with respect to the infrastructure funds and the programs underneath that fund is going to be... The role of the Business Development Commission is not going to be to necessarily set the direction with respect to those funds. That's going to be the role of the Infrastructure Finance Board, the governor-appointed board of those finance, local representatives, economic development experts that have the experience with respect to those programs. The Infrastructure Finance Authority Board is going to advise the Business Development Commission on this, but the, as I understand it and the way it's written, is that it would not be a direct policymaking function of the Business Development Commission. They can offer their input, their suggestions to the board, but I think the way the structure has been in the past, the commission's focus is on those business development activities, and that's where they see themselves in the future.
I apologize to the committee for my slowness on this, if everybody else gets it. So let me see if I can. So the Infrastructure Fund lives in the Business Development Commission. The Business Development Commission has its board members, but they're not the ones defining the criteria that we discussed earlier. It's a separate body that's appointed by the governor that doesn't live within the Business Development Commission and has an independent authority over the fund that lives within the Business Development Commission.
Is this one of those times you need a whiteboard representative?
I would love a whiteboard, Mr. Chair.
I mean, let's see if I can clear it up. Chair Reed, Representative Bailey. I think we need to look at it from a program standpoint, and the programs within that infrastructure fund are the community development block grants, okay, which are federal funds, which are proscribed. So they will determine, they won't change how those are allocated, they'll just change how you apply for them, the way you can access those funds. By that I mean, let me talk to you about the other funds. In there, there's community development block grants, special public works funds, water, wastewater, safe drinking water. Okay, those are the funds that are in there around infrastructure. Those funds are still going to be used the same way. What we're going to do is try to create an infrastructure finance authority and an asset management system around those funds. Right now, the way communities access those funds, it's one pot, and everybody comes in and they all go after the same amount of money. There is no plan. There is no criteria. There's criteria around the funds and how you access them, but there isn't any criteria about who applies for them. So what we're going to do on the Infrastructure Finance Authority and the Asset Management System is to teach regions how to work together and prioritize their needs so that this community has an immediate need today, and they've determined that, whereas Community B has a need, but it can wait for 2 years. Or it can wait for 4 years, and we'll prioritize the needs of the regions, and they'll come forth with a plan, a regional plan around that, and access these funds to better serve the businesses and the communities. As far as parks are concerned, no, these funds aren't used for parks. We don't change how the funds are used. We'll just change how they're being accessed and who makes the determination. Right now, what happened in the last session, as Representative Edwards said, the department couldn't adequately explain how Community A was awarded these funds and Community B wasn't, when the needs appeared to be the same. Okay? What happened with communities that Nancy talked about earlier, there's communities out there that have a very good plan around their infrastructure needs. It's a plan that goes out 10 years, and they may have come to this department in the past and said, look, we want to build a industrial park on the outskirts of the city, and to do that, we need to bring water to it, we need to bring roads, and they bring that plan forth. Well, there's only so much money. Okay, Community B, which hasn't been as thoughtful in their infrastructure planning, their main water system breaks. The funds immediately go to that because they have to be fixed. There's no requirement. The only requirement they had was to fix it as cheap or as inexpensively as possible. And there's no requirement that says it has to last 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years. Well, we don't think that's a good use or good stewardship of state funds. So around the asset management system, we're going to say, great, your water system breaks. Here's what you're going to have to do. We're going to help you do this. We're going to create a sustainable water system that you're going to maintain for the next 20 years. These are the things that aren't in place now that need to be in place. We realize this is going to cost more money up front, but it's going to save money in the long run. It's going to create sustainable water systems. The reason, and I know I'm being long-winded here, but the reason we're doing this, Representative Bailey and members of the commission, is the last go-around, the governor's recommended budget had $100 million to recapitalize the SPWF, the Special Public Works Fund. This is to meet the existing needs that are out there. Well, we were only given $21 million, which doesn't come close to meeting the needs, infrastructure needs, particularly of rural communities throughout the state. And the governor said, how do we fix that? These needs aren't going to go away. how can we make it a better system to address the needs out there? So we feel, or we know, quite frankly, that by creating this infrastructure finance authority and putting those decisions in the hands of the stakeholders and actually making them come forth with a plan to request these monies is going to be successful.
Found that very helpful. Thank you.
Probably need to do some follow-up with the whiteboard.
I'd be happy to.
Okay. Representative Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was very helpful, but I'm going to pose a hypothetical and see how it works. Let's assume we have a rogue community, and I'm going to call it Salem, and it wants money for some sort of a project. Is it going to have to be involved in this, in your department, in order to access funds, or can it circumvent, or in the past would it have been able to circumvent your department and obtain, let's say, block grant funds or community funds from some other source? But I guess the real question is this an expansion of what you're doing, or is it pretty much what you've already had, just restructured?
Go ahead.
Chair Reed, Representative Bentz, members of the committee. To your last question, is it an expansion of what we currently do? I would say no, it's not an expansion of what we do. Rather, it's a better way of doing business. Again, having the Infrastructure Finance Authority Board and with its representation of folks that have knowledge, experience, and expertise with infrastructure needs throughout the state will better determine and prioritize the need to make better use of those limited state resources. To your earlier point about the rogue community, a community comes to the department to seek financing for their infrastructure project. They don't have to come to the department, but a number of communities do come to the department because we can offer them financing that is more effective than what they might otherwise be able to get. So would they be able to access community block grant outside of the department? I'm not that familiar with the program, but I don't think so. I think they would have to come through the department to be able to access those community block grant funds. I apologize. I have misspoken.
If I can just, from my days working for the mayor in Portland, larger cities with population floors of X, which I can't remember what they are, receive direct allocations in addition to the state allocations. Excuse me. So the city of Salem or the city of Portland or the city of Medford likely has direct allocations from the federal government for CDBG dollars in addition to the state allocations. However, rural communities only have the state allocations to access. And so it really depends on which community you're looking at. So if Salem is circumventing the state system, they're probably simply accessing dollars that are directly going to your city government. That's not the same in small communities. They don't have two resources for the same program.
Right. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Would it be correct to say then that the department is now going to have to do an audit or kind of a, in order to measure one community against another and in order to maintain a kind of a vision of the quality of their assets, which I heard earlier, that this is going to be an opportunity for asset management. I assume the assets are the infrastructure that's scattered across every small town in our state. In order to measure one community against another, you'd have to know what it is. You couldn't wait for them all to come in. So how is that in 30 seconds going to work?
Representative Beth, Chair Reed, it's we're not going to go back and look at everybody's assets, so to speak. It's when they bring their proposal forward and ask for money from the state, they're going to have to meet certain criteria. And that's what the asset management program is. In the past, as I stated before, the only thing that was required of them is they put forth the request and they build the least expensive sewer system possible. That's not an effective asset management. And the state had no oversight after the fact. Once we loaned them the money, they could, they had to build it. But after that, we never managed that. Well, while these aren't our assets, they're either the county's or the community's assets, it is the state's money. And I think we have every right to say this is how you know, what you need to put in place in order to access this money. And that's what we mean by an asset management. We want systems that aren't the cheapest that are going to break in 5 years. We want systems that are sustainable, that are going to last. And that's going to be one of the requirements.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Hope you'll stick around. We may uncover some more technical questions. We have a number of other people who are interested in being heard on this bill, so I'll call forward Jack Isselman and John Southgate, please.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Isselman of Tonkintorp. I appear today on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association. That's a statewide nonprofit organization working to support over 300 public and private sector economic development professionals throughout Oregon. These are the individuals who are on the front lines of diversifying and expanding the state's economy. We're here today in support of House Bill 2152. I'm joined today by John Southgate, a member of OEDA. He currently serves as the Economic Development Director for the City of Hillsborough, and prior to that served as a Senior Development Director working with Urban Renewal Programs at the Portland Development Commission. I think I'll turn it over to Mr. Southgate first to talk a little bit about his experiences with OECDD through the years, the virtues of this bill, and then to the degree there are questions we can help resolve, we'll be happy to take those.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Reed and members of the committee. I'm here to offer my support on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association and the City of
Hillsborough. And if you could start with your name for the record,
you
please.
You want my name
Yes,
first.
Please.
John Southgate, Economic Development Director for the City of Hillsborough.
Thank you very much.
In support of the bill. I'm very proud of the relationship we have with OECDD. A word that really comes to mind is partnership. We partner with OECDD in a number of important ventures that have benefited not just Hillsborough but the entire state by creating jobs. Some examples that you're very familiar with, I'm sure, Solar World, Genentech, even to some extent Intel, core employers in the greater Hillsborough area that, again, benefit the entire state by creating substantial high-wage jobs. Our relationship has benefited through a number of specific programs. The Special Public Works Fund, we tapped into that fund to provide necessary infrastructure for Genentech, which was the first biotech investment in the state of Oregon, located in the Chute Road area of Hillsborough. We've also partnered with OECDD in the Enterprise Zone, which has resulted in hundreds of new jobs in Hillsborough since its inception 3 years ago. We also partner with OECDD and others on Team Oregon, which is working aggressively to bring alternative energy, especially solar energy investments, to Oregon. Of course, Solar World is our big success so far, but we continue to work with OECDD, again, and other partners in attempts to recruit additional businesses as well as the suppliers for those businesses. So it's a key partnership. I want to say, with regard to the bill, one of the things that strikes me is, again, the word partnership. OECDD went out of their way to really go around the state, not just go into their little box and create some new organization, but instead really involved us, stakeholders around the state, in creating what I think is going to be a streamlined, more efficient way of administering their programs. So again, we strongly support the bill and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Looks like you've done a good job delivering your message.
With a cold, no less.
Thank you very much. It's always helpful to hear from folks who have dealt with things in the real world.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we could hear from the local perspective. So I'll call up Michael Novak, Doris Penwell, and Mayor John McArdle, please. And Jack, while you're sitting down, thanks for telling us how to pronounce your the acronym, too. I was wondering about that. OEDA, we're all practice.
Yeah. Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Novak with the League of Oregon Cities, which represents all 242 cities here in the state. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to express the League's support of House Bill 2152. Now, the Oregon Economic Development Department has helped Oregon communities build capacity and stimulate growth through its business and development activities and its community development programs. Now, both have helped to promote a climate that has strengthened business communities and created jobs in the state. This bill allows for a better focus of the infrastructure projects administered by the program. Now, we appreciate the effort that the OECDD made throughout 2008 to meet with cities and local governments across the state to discover what was working, what could be done better, and what was needed for more effective programs. Now, what they heard was they need to have a more direct local input in the implementation and guidance of programs. To that, this reorganization creates the Infrastructure Finance Authority to be governed by a separate board of directors within the department that will include representatives from cities and other local representatives. This IFA is designed to work with local communities to review their eligibility, feasibility of the projects, to help identify financing and funding sources, and to provide technical assistance on the projects. Now, this creates greater collaboration and accountability, and in the end, can better reflect the benefits to the community as a whole, and the work accomplished rather than merely just using job creation as the only measure of success. House Bill 2152 allows for a more streamlined process and effective use of resources in this difficult economy. Chair Reed, members of the committee, thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm John McArdle. I'm the mayor in Independence. I'm also the vice chair of the League of Oregon Cities, and I'm here supporting the bill. You heard all the from the 50,000-foot level. Let me give it to you from 15 miles away over in Independence, just over the bridge. Okay. Let me talk a little bit about what infrastructure investment means. I know my own community best, and so we're going to use my city as an example, but the parallels exist in all 242 cities. Infrastructure investment, for instance, in our community with the CDBG, well, yeah, it helped us with the library project. It matched the investment that we made in from a local perspective. It helped the streetscape project. But what did that turn into? That helped us attract a large employer to our area because they saw that we were willing to invest in our own community, and the leverage that we got from the CDBG grants and through help with the OECDD, we got a business that came in with 60 jobs and now has 325 jobs. They built 200,000 square feet of medallion cabinetry. That turns into real live jobs, family wage. When Special Public Works helped, when businesses wanted to come to our area with helping some of our road improvements that we would not be able to do on our own, but together we were able to make it better so we have, again, stronger jobs. Not everything is a large investment. The folks helped us with a small business development loan program. It was only $30,000, but that helped 15 people take a look at opening a new business in our, and not just our community, but we did it for the whole county. And so 8 of those people have opened small businesses. 4 decided they don't want to be in the small business world. They just don't want to do that, which is, that's an important thing to learn. And 3 of them are still thinking about it and trying to put the things together. You know, this kind of investment is a partnership. It allows us to have leverage, which we could not do. And so I'm encouraging you to support this. It makes good sense. And I really like the part where the people involved get a chance to be involved in the decision-making, because I know what it takes to raise water rates. You guys got gas taxes. We have waters and sewer rates. We all know how hard those kind of things are. And we are visiting with each other around the table. You know, there's a way for folks to see if it passes the smell test. You know, are you folks doing a good job of investing in your own community? And somebody who sits in the same chair in another part can really hold that. So that's the end of my comments. I'll turn it over to Doris.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's been well.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Doris Penwell. I represent the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm here in support of House Bill 2152. We worked very closely with the Economic and Community Development Department in the Governor's Office in from the beginning to the end and to seeing this bill and its fruition. Counties work very closely at the local level with the state in trying to promote and enhance economic development in their communities. And it's both on the business development side and it's on the infrastructure development side. So at the local level, even though in this bill we're separating very nicely the programs of business development from infrastructure financing, at the local level, we have to put those things together. I think the way this bill has done that allows for an ability to talk about the different kind of programs, but also allows the people at the local level that have experience in how you invest your financing for community infrastructure to advise and help develop the program for infrastructure. So I really believe that the Infrastructure Finance Authority concept is really one of the better parts of this bill. We have a lot that we can do with that, and we're just beginning. You might recall that with community infrastructure, just about all the funds, except for the federal funds that come through the Community Development Block Grant, are really loans. Very few grants are given out of the infrastructure funding. These are paid for by fees at the community level. So it does seem proper and right that the people that work very closely with these things are now working with the department on implementing newer and better programs that efficiently deliver these things for everybody in Oregon. And I think just getting this input from the local level will make sure that we're supporting everybody, the people around Oregon. By their own nature, these kind of programs support the smaller communities more probably than the larger communities, because larger communities sometimes have other abilities to fund things through bonding and otherwise. But most of the communities that are smaller in Oregon, this is where they have to go to try to find most of their funding to do what they need to do. The name change of the department, Oregon Business Development Commission, I think it does tell you what the major purpose of this department is in Oregon, even though three-fourths of their funds are used for infrastructure financing. But even with that, many of the funds for infrastructure truly support business development. Otherwise, businesses couldn't come to a community if we weren't supporting it by health and safety measures, making sure clean water, and whatever is there. And a lot of the funds out of the Special Public Works for instance, infrastructure-wise, are used for things other than water and wastewater. They're used for community facilities. They're used for industrial parks, local road work, bridge work, port facilities that really are part of the engine of economic development in Oregon. So really, telecommunications, that's another area. It's a broad range of uses that can be made of these funds. So it really, even though it's infrastructure, it does support business development at its very base level. And finally, for the counties, the conversion of the Regional Investment Fund that has been in existence for about 20 years, it was converted to something called the Local Economic Opportunity Fund. Right now, the funding for decisions at the local level by local boards is now being discontinued by the end of this biennium. This bill, though, does provide for this Local Economic Opportunity Fund, and if economies are better in the future, maybe it will provide an ability to have some funding available for capacity and for economic development work where decisions can be made regionally at the local level. So all in all, the counties are very pleased with the bill as it's coming out and with the amendments that are still to come on the bill. So we hope you can support it, and we'd love to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Other questions for this panel? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you highlighting the local economic development local economic opportunity fund, and just kind of curious on your take on that local economic development strategy and how you're working with the state to develop that strategy and help implement that fund. How do you see that playing out that's different than what you're doing today?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, I think it's still to be determined, but I, when the funding was not possible for, in this current budget and in the previous budget, really, to do much at the local level, it made it very difficult to do things that were very strategic. And, you know, if you have more money, it's almost easier to put together a plan and then use the funding for something that's an important element to something at your level. I think in the future, we hope that it can at least be used to make sure that every area of the state has the capacity to respond to businesses in terms of having somebody to answer the phone when Economic Development Department calls, for the small business in the community to go to them and say, how do I access this or that program? Can you help me how to put together a business plan? I have some workers that need training. What do I do? Where do I go? I think it helps to have a little bit of funding at the local level to support what the state has. So in the future, I think we can develop it the way we see it. As you probably know, Representative Holvey, a lot of the regional investment funds over the past, and in some areas specifically, have used it for workforce development. At the local, there's never enough money in Oregon to pay for workforce development for businesses, and the money that's invested from Oregon is really federal money. We've always hoped to have a little more state money to do some of this vital work. Customized training for new businesses at the community college or other places that provide training to the workers. These are the kind of things you could develop for the future when our economy turns around and we have an ability to do some of that creative work. We'll work very closely with the department on that.
Well, thank you. And no, just a comment, Mr. Chair. One thing I really liked about this bill was that concept of the local economic development strategy, mm-hmm. that the state's going to partner with our local communities to really have a comprehensive strategy for the local areas.
I think that's really an important piece.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Holvey. Not seeing any questions here. Thank you very much for being
here
and adding to the discussion. You also gave us a nice segue when you mentioned ports. So let's call Annette Price, who obviously got that figured out as well. Gary Neal and Mark Landauer, please.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Annette Price. I'm the State Affairs Manager for the Port of Portland. I'm here testifying today on behalf of the Oregon Public Ports Association. We support House Bill 2152 with the technical amendments that Doris alluded to, and we have appreciated being a part of the team and the conversations initially with Tim and Nancy. As the process began, we were able to have some very candid conversations about what was and what was not working, and the bill reflects those changes as the two focuses of job creation and retention and local infrastructure development. As many of you know, the Port of Portland has worked well with the department on a number of different projects, from most recently the Reynolds site in Troutdale, where FedEx Ground is building a facility that will employ hundreds of workers, to coordinating our international marketing efforts that benefit Oregon business. We go from soup to nuts with the department, have enjoyed that relationship, and particularly have enjoyed that relationship since Tim and his team have come on board. And as we all are tightening our belts and focusing on doing more with less, it is refreshing that the agency has adopted a more strategic and nimble mission to be flexible in the rapidly changing economic times. And to that end, finally, the Oregon Public Ports Association members are working with the department on the Ports Statewide Strategic Plan, and we have appreciated their leadership in getting the plan moving. It had not been moving, and we are hopeful that the statewide strategic plan, which will enable ports to take a good look at what each are doing and be more effective in the state's economic development picture and business development picture. We're hopeful that will be completed by hopefully later this year, at year's end, if not early next year. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll conclude my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Neal.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, My name is Gary Neal. I'm the general.
Feel free to move the microphone over a little bit if it's more comfortable for you. And as I mentioned earlier, you keep it a little bit away from your mouth.
Okay.
You distort. That'll
Does that work?
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Thanks. My name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Morrow, located in Morrow County, about 165 miles east of Portland on the Columbia River. I've been involved at the port and involved in these programs that the Oregon Economic Development Department administers for the past 20 years. So I've had quite a bit of experience over those years of working with the department and various directors of the agency and the various programs. I commended the state of Oregon and the legislature and the governor's office and the department in making an effort to try to evaluate and determine what they felt was an important consideration for making much-needed changes and recommendations and changes of the department in this reorganization effort. I've been an advocate of the department and the programs for many years, but I've been a frustrated partner in that effort as well. And I think that the Infrastructure Finance Authority is a great tool and a great effort that I'm looking forward to see some of the challenges and roadblocks that have been I felt have been in place, potentially removed, and help make the programs more user-friendly. I know that having the organization have members such as ports and cities and counties and special districts as part of that board is making it a collaborative effort. Well, I believe will give good policy to allow the programs to be implemented to their fullest. And in these times, I think it's very important to maximize the use of the funds and to get the most out of them. And I think that Tim McCabe and Lynn Schessler and the staff at the department are doing a great job to date, and I'm looking forward to seeing it move ahead. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mark Landauer with the Special Districts Association of Oregon, representing some 950 districts across the state, here to testify in support of 2152. I believe I may be standing between you and the door, which is obviously a dangerous place to be, and so I'll make this very short. We are supportive of 2152. We are excited about the prospect of the creation of an infrastructure finance authority. We believe that it'll bring more transparency and accountability into how public funds are used to develop infrastructure in the state. Much of what I had prepared to say has been said already, so I'll stop at that point and take any questions and hope that there are none. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions?
I have a question for you, Mr. Chair.
For me?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
How are we doing?
I think we're doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm good. How's the list going?
We have one more person who has signed up to testify.
Oh, okay, good. Then I will ask a question if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't get the name of our guest from Morrow.
Mr. Neal.
Gary Neal. Are you familiar with Reclaim?
Yes, I am.
Would you consider coming back at some point and talking to us, maybe with somebody from Reclaim? Because I think I've thought this for some time, this would be an excellent sustainability lesson for this committee.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Gillum, I'd be happy to do that, and I look forward to it.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gillum. Thank you very much. If there aren't any other questions, we'll let you go. Joe Ismuth is our last person who has signed up. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on House Bill 2152? If not, perhaps while Mr. Esmond's coming forward, Paul, I wonder if you might be able to join us too. And after Mr. Esmond concludes his testimony, maybe please have a seat, Mr. Esmond.
Paul,
maybe when he concludes, perhaps you could give us just a quick sense of the amendments that are in process, so the committee can have a sense of that as well. So, Mr. Esmond, please.
Good afternoon. I don't have any prepared remarks except for the flyer that hopefully you got.
And don't forget to start with your name, please.
Oh, see? I'm a new guy. Joe Esmond with the IBW 48, and in the interest of disclosure, a board member of the Energy Action Northwest. I'm coming here not to ask you for any money.
Thank you.
I don't have a sob story except, not a sob story, I shouldn't say that. See, I'm brand new. I got a trained workforce. We have 40,000 people trained in the state of Oregon, skilled labor, who come out of apprenticeships, who do not get money from the state, the feds, or any other agency. I have the IBW has got 1,300 people trained in solder, electricians, who do the same stuff here or out on the highway. So I'm urging you, as an example, and the carpenters, Representative Holvey, I come out in support of this bill. Again, I echo what Representative Holvey said about family wage jobs. We need the infrastructure to bridge to the future. How do you attract businesses from all over the world if you have unstable energy sources? Or it's been an aging infrastructure of power lines and pipe. I don't know how you're going to do it. It's a tough choice. There are projects across the country where they put in 40 or 50 acres of solar panels. You got to get the power into the grid. So I don't want to take up a whole lot of your time, but I do want to volunteer my services or services of the unions for any type of input into education and offer to go out on a business trip. My business manager has a passport, and so do I. We'd be happy to partner up with the state at our own dime and time to go out and help recruit businesses. We are educated. We have an educated, trained workforce. That's what attracts people here. So, and as far as people trying to get into, our apprenticeship, last year we have 1,200 people applied. We took 120 people. So, and again, just one more thing. In 2002, we got involved with a bill, I forget the House bill number, where we helped imitate what they do in Austin and Boston to take in the research money out of the laboratories so that they could be allowed to have private investment and stuff like that. So I'm part of Oregon Best now. So we're pro-business. We sell skilled labor. So let us help. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Esmond, for bringing that important perspective.
Paul? No questions?
I saw you getting up, and I didn't see anybody moving their hand up to ask. So I think
we were involved in the reclaim project.
I think you've escaped. Thank you. So I'm hoping that Paul can just give us a quick sense of the amendments that are underway to get this bill ready for movement.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Reed, members of the committee. I believe that the committee administrator had presented kind of a sectional breakdown of the bill and had italicized what the proposed amendments would be, so I'll just run through them very quickly.
Thanks.
Sections 1 through 7, the part of the bill that deals with the Infrastructure Finance Authority, there are two main amendments. The first one would add a treasurer's office representative or designee to the board membership. And the second amendment would address what the Finance Authority Board's powers would be to approve grants and loans, and that was omitted from the initial draft. Sections 8 through 14 deal with the name change to the Business Development Commission, or what would be called the Business Development Commission, and we have reinserted findings that were omitted regarding infrastructure, ports, arts, and capacity building with respect to rural and distressed areas. And we also clarify the Business Development Commission's membership to have a locally elected official. It wasn't that clear in the initial draft, but the amendment will specify that. Sections 15 through 19 deal with the department, the administrative provisions. That's where the name change is introduced to the Oregon Business Development Department. the section regarding the Community Development Block Grant Program was deleted from the initial draft and did not specify who would be administering it. The amended version would clarify that the Infrastructure Finance Authority would be the administrating or would administer that particular program. It also reinserts previous language regarding the department's promulgating rules for contracts. Sections 49 through 61, which deals with the Oregon Business Development Fund, which is a business finance program. What we would propose to do is revert oversight and loan approval back to the Business Development Commission. The initial draft had it placed with the department, and it's our opinion it's best suited with the commission, so that would be another proposed amendment. I think that those are the major amendments to the bill. Without having seen what they look like coming out of legislative council, it's difficult to speak with much more specificity, but I think that's a pretty accurate summary of the major changes that were proposed.
I think it's helpful just to have the intent even before we see the amendments. Are there any questions about the amendments? Representative Thatcher?
I don't know if there's a question about the amendment, but I figured you could answer the question.
Sure.
Are we replacing, and I'm sorry, I was in another committee testifying, so you may have already talked about this, but what is the name of the Oregon Infrastructure Finance Authority Board? Is that replacing anything, or is this in addition to programs and boards and such that are already in statute?
Chair Reed, Representative Thatcher, the Finance Authority Board would be a discrete entity within the department that would oversee those community development and infrastructure programs that are currently administered by the department. It's essentially modeled after the Arts Commission, which also resides within the department.
What we've talked about before you came was the need to have additional expertise about infrastructure specifically. So I think that's one of the main arguments for it. All right, any other questions? Thank you very much. It's a nice bit of symmetry that we started our session, this legislative session, with you, Mr. Director, and you're back to help us continue our journey. Do you have a concluding comment?
No, I'd just like to say I really appreciate all the attention you're giving. This is very important, and I know you've asked some very good questions today, and I appreciate that. So if you've got any more, please don't hesitate to call me. The department will be happy to answer them.
Thank you. We appreciate
you
being here and helping us understand your work. Everyone's excited about it, and we're looking forward to seeing the amendments and helping this organization move forward.
Thank you.
Is there any other comments for the good of the order? Close the public hearing on House Bill 2152. And good news, Representative Gilliam, you get a little extra time here. We're adjourned.
You want to go do something?
You were very concerned when you were asking about how we're doing. How many more people do we have?